What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Wednesday morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber with Jim Cramer. We're live from Post 9 at the New York Stock Exchange. Carl has the morning off. Futures looking like we're going to have a lower open. Of course, 2 o'clock, Fed meeting. Can't forget that. And an awful lot of earnings to digest this morning. That's where our roadmap starts. Alphabet and Microsoft, yep, the two of the biggest giants out there. They have earnings. Stocks moving in opposite directions. Jim and I will break that down. Plus, we do have Boeing shares higher. That on its better than expected earnings. And Dave Calhoun comes
sharply
to
CEO. Better.
Sharply
Dave.
Better.
Sharply.
Dave Calhoun is going to join us a few minutes from now to talk about the quarter and the road ahead, of course. We're also going to look, speaking of the road ahead, to the Fed. Expected to hike interest rates this afternoon following what was that pause. All right, let's start with Alphabet and Microsoft. Jim, I know you've obviously been working on this ever since they reported those numbers.
Yes.
I got a bunch of stuff here as well. Just start us off. What are you thinking?
First of all, Alphabet was extraordinary because search was so good. I know people said cloud was good, and it was good, but remember, it's off a small base. What I think that really happened was this was the quarter where YouTube, which has no traffic acquisition costs, became the principal method for a lot of companies to be able to reach young people around the globe. I think that's the major takeaway.
$7.7 billion in revenues, and it inflected positively.
It inflected positive, and I've been waiting for
and
that.
And it's been going the other way.
Right.
Just to put it in perspective, by the way, at a $7.7 billion quarter revenue run rate, it's one of the biggest media companies out there where you just have it on its own.
I think there's a roadmap which says it's going to be the biggest. I mean, if you talk to a James Quincy from Coca-Cola, this is how people are reaching people, because you can tailor it. It's a remarkable medium, and this is before they really put in anything about the NFL ticket. Search was extraordinary. Yes, we don't want Ruth to leave as CFO, but she's going to stay as president. She's going to look at investments. Ruth Porat, who's extraordinary.
Ruth Porat, 14-year CFO, now becoming and president
brilliant.
And also chief investment officer, overseeing things like Waymo.
If you think she's smart, read the obituary of her father, and you will discover a great man. Truly unbelievable man. I liked everything I heard.
But by the way, there's also a belief that a new CFO will be there. Obviously, I'm talking to shareholders who are hopeful, more focused on costs. Even.
Exactly.
That's the hope.
Okay, so there was a decline in costs while there was acceleration in search, but she did say that was kind of one-off. But people are not regarding it as one-off. They did take out a big headcount in a risk.
Their operating margin at Alphabet was 29%. Yeah. That's a nice margin.
Yes, it is.
And again, sort of, they have great leverage with that margin.
28% bumping
great
cloud.
Operating leverage.
It was a great quarter.
And they didn't lose share in search. Now, it's early. It's really early. But I guess some of us have been wondering, well, will you start to see some signs of Bing, Microsoft's product incursion, as a result, of course, of its incorporation of ChatGPT, essentially.
Right.
No real sign.
No, it actually went the other way. What I thought was interesting was that they spent more time talking about artificial intelligence than Microsoft did. Now, the one I want to disagree with the market entirely is the direction of Microsoft. Now, the stock was back at 352, which was up nicely, up a couple, but up 7 from where it was yesterday. When Amy Hood, one of my absolute favorite CFOs, I've known her from when she was at Goldman Sachs, so she's now someone I regard as maybe the steadiest of CFOs. We're talking about 30 years. She is not anyone who ever makes you feel better. She took the stock from 352 to 338. Simply by making some comments that basically were, look, we have to spend a lot more on generative AI.
CapEx is going to go up every quarter sequentially
and
this
that crushed
year.
The stock. But she only.
And by the way, we are talking about CapEx that is already, where are we, 7? I mean,
it's big. But the stock is wrong. The stock is mispriced because growth, now there's many headlines that are wrong. Growth actually accelerated Azure. We don't have the Activision Blizzard deal yet. LinkedIn was good. They did call a bottom in personal computers. She did only give a one-quarter estimate
guide. Azure
It's good. Yeah, people just are totally misinterpreting it.
Why? Know. I mean, I didn't think
because
it went
from 24-25. It's like fine. Mm-hmm. Where the big miss here is that there was a product, Microsoft 365, the Copilot product. Okay, and she raised they raised price for that product dramatically. That is your AI product, and that price increase was not included in her estimate guide. So people are buying this the wrong way. They have not researched the way Amy Hood. I've been a follower of Amy Hood since, I guess, I don't know, 91.
Right.
And this is her style. Her style is always to use what happened at about 6:05, and they started to call it the forecast as the fulcrum of why people should do what they do. And it's almost always incorrect because she's a conservative individual. So Microsoft down 12, I think, is the best opportunity of this morning.
Yeah. I mean, again, I've had more enthusiasm shared with me about Google's quarter than Microsoft's. That
Certainly.
Said, the commentary I've gotten from a couple holders is it's fine and still best positioned
okay.
is the feeling for
best
Microsoft.
Yes, it is best positioned. And they really, I mean, there's a moment in the comms call where they basically admitted that you could get 45 to 50% increase in productivity from code people. And Asadi talked repeatedly about low code, no code, and how important it is. The number of clients that they brought in off this is so staggering. The idea that Amy Hood, that she could actually say those things about the stock just plummeted when she gave a forecast. That forecast was a conservative forecast. And as much as I think that Amy's great, Amy put the big kibosh on the stock that was climbing.
Final thought, I want to go somewhere very quickly because we've got to get to Boeing. They're both increasing CapEx enormously. The one beneficiary here truly
is NVIDIA.
It's NVIDIA.
Yeah, that was the call,
right? That's the main takeaway.
It verified the $4 billion revenue forecast that Jensen Huang gave. That may prove to be conservative.
We want to talk more about their AI ambitions at both Microsoft and Alphabet, but
yeah.
We got to get to Boeing.
They're
right
as hot. Microsoft is as hot as if I lit a match to that polyester suit jacket you're wearing.
Oh, God, again, polyester.
Well, I think you should scrap it.
Armani's G-Line.
Oh, my God, that's so flammable.
It's Armani's G-Line.
Lisa's got no asbestos.
Come on, A, B, C,
Can we go
D,
to Phil,
E,
please?
F. There's so many lines that come before the G-Line.
I made my point. Can we go to Phil?
Yes. By the way, tighten your tie.
It's a brownie, goddamn.
Let's turn to another big earnings mover. Phil LeBeau has that for us. He's in Arlington, Virginia, and he's with Dave Calhoun of Boeing. Phil.
Who's getting a chuckle or two out of you two today? A nice routine you got going there. Dave Calhoun, CEO of Boeing, joining us on a day where, look, better than expected earnings, a narrower than expected loss.
Yep.
Revenue better than expected, but the free cash flow is what I want to talk about.
Yep.
What, $2.5 billion? The street was expecting about $114 million.
Yep.
What did analysts not appreciate about the quarter that had their estimates so low compared to what you delivered?
Well, it's a reflection of the strong demand market that we've been talking about for quite some time. Everybody will recall we had a big order with Air India that needed to get finalized. Riyadh Air, the Saudi Kingdom. And then Ryanair even are all deals that were finalized in the quarter, and the advance payments that come with them are what show up. We can't time those perfectly and we can't predict when they'll be, but somewhere between the second and the third, they were going to happen and it's happened.
Let's talk about the 737 MAX. One of your announcements this morning is you're transitioning. It was 31 a month. You're in the process of going up to 38 a month. That reflects your confidence in the supply chain. How much more stable is it now than, let's say, a year ago?
Yeah, it's settling down. There's no doubt. We announced our intention to get to 38. We're actually a little ahead of our plan to get to 38. The master schedule related to that increase, and not only that increase, but the increase to 50 later on in our horizon here, that master schedule's been out there. So suppliers have been working diligently to sort of settle down, eliminate the constraints, and slowly and steadily, we're seeing fewer and fewer delivery constraints. So I'm feeling pretty good about where this is going.
You mentioned the orders, number of huge ones in the second quarter. And that has a number of people saying, well, the demand is played out. We've seen the big orders now. It'll be a more normal market in terms of orders. You don't think that's the case, do you? You think there's more big ones out there, right?
Yeah, don't hold your breath. I mean, there are big orders out there. A lot of sovereign interests. I don't talk about it often, but the quality of the backlog has never been better, never.
And explain that. That means these are people who are going to follow through on these orders.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Think about Air India, underwritten by the Tata Group, one of the strongest companies in the world. Airport development going at a pace that we've never seen in India. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia wants to be a destination. And when they want to be a destination, they will be one. They are developing airports, creating new airlines, placing orders. And yes, these advance payments reflect the seriousness with which they're going to approach it. So it is those, and it is many more to come. So, yeah, it is a pretty constrained world out there with respect to the demand that we see.
Dave, Jim's got a question for you. Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, Dave, you know, before the big fracas, the Boeing stock was at about 378. And what I thought happened was that there just became this giant parking lot of planes that were just wouldn't be able to be worked off for ages. I'm looking at what you're doing, and I'm thinking that there's a definitive free cash flow breakout, much bigger than now, at 2024, and that you may be one of the biggest free cash flow stories in the world, including tech, after 2024.
Well, Jim, I mean, that is a very important point, a very important message. We started the post-MAX world with 450 airplanes that needed to be returned to service. A lot of work goes into every one of those airplanes. We deliver them one at a time. The reliability of those airplanes as they've entered service has been fantastic. So we're on a pretty good run there. And yes, by the end of 24, we're almost completely out of the 737 MAX inventory overhang, and we're almost completely out, if not totally out, of the 787 join verification work that we have going on in that program. So, yeah, that 24 moment is a big one. We get to eliminate shadow factories, and yes, I think the model that we enjoyed before COVID and before the MAX issue, that will become very apparent to everybody.
Obviously, you know planes much better than I do. I know stocks, and I think that 2019. Number is going to be behind you when I think about the fact that your supply chain issues seem to be resolved. I know from what happened with Raytheon yesterday, you can never just declare it, and that's not you, by the way, but it seems like all the supply chain issues that had dodged you, including the number of engineers that you need yourself, are also now behind you, and that therefore, again, earnings per share can increase dramatically.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's everything is just settling down. That's the word I would like to use. There's no big dearth of engineering talent. The training of the new talent that has been recruited to the supply chain side of our house, as well as our own, that's been moving along at a steady pace. As I said, it's just starting to settle down, and I'm feeling more and more comfortable that we're going to get ahead of it. We can't rush it. We've got to be disciplined every step of the way, and we are.
Dave, when you look at, you mentioned these large orders are out there and the quality of the backlog. One of the things that struck me is you don't have a lot of leasing companies placing large orders. At what point, and they know the industry, what point do you expect them to say, whoa, we got to get in line here, or we're going to be boxed out further in the decade than we need to be?
Yeah, well, you sort of answered your own question. They will ultimately have to get in line, and they will want to place orders because their growth is dependent on more airplanes. They will feed a little bit on the residual markets and the older airplanes that get retired or almost retired. They'll feed on that a bit, but eventually they will want to buy new airplanes. They're smart about their timing, so if there ever is a precipice, and I don't see one for quite a long time, but if there ever is, that's when they'll probably want to flood in and rebuild their fleets.
And with the Dreamliner, you're at 4 a month right now, going to 5 by the end of this year.
Yep.
On track for that 10 by 25, 26, 10 per month?
Yes, I think we are. It will not be a demand issue. It will simply be, can this steady improvement in our supply chain continue to get us there? And I think it will.
I have to ask you, it's Fed Day, and we know that the expectation is they may raise an interest a quarter point. When you look at this market right now, we were talking beforehand, are you to the point now where you're like, I wasn't sure this was going to continue, but what do you think now?
Yeah, the resiliency of this recovery and the growth and the prices that consumers pay to fly on airplanes, particularly across the oceans, it's pretty remarkable. And there is no sign of it going away. So my own view is that quarter point moves probably aren't going to slow things down much. The consumers have a lot deeper pockets than most people think. I also think travel has been reprioritized on the list of things that are where they have discrimination. They are definitely prioritizing travel in that list of things they want to do.
Dave Calhoun, CEO of Boeing, on a day where better than expected report, guys, for the second quarter. We'll send it back to you. We're going to get some popcorn and watch every tune as you talk about each other's wardrobe.
Phil, we do that every day. It's not flammable.
Yeah, today seems to be a particularly big day.
It does. It does. It's not like we don't have news to get to, of course, including what you guys just shared.
I think it was a fabulous interview.
Thank you, Phil.
I just want to say, this reminded me of the old days when Phil would interview Boeing when the stock was going to the 300s, because it's now just a story of meeting the incredible demand. Work off that inventory that had been on the parking lots, and wide body is very, very good for them. So I think that we either, at one point I thought that Boeing would have to do an equity offering because they have so much debt. That had been the overhang. I don't know if they need to do it. This was just a straight out good quarter. And the stock's going to head much higher.
Generating that free cash flow.
The stock's going
to head
much higher than just $8.
It's funny, it does take me back to that period during, in the spring of 2020, though, where they managed to do that enormous debt deal that did change.
That was the
psychology a lot.
That was the
Mnuchin
deal.
Suddenly we're like, okay, everybody's going to be okay.
He worked very closely with Greg Smith. Now, what I do love, and let's go back over this. This is a free cash flow generator like no other, including an Alphabet. And yes, including a Microsoft. Stock goes much higher.
Still to come, we're going to look ahead to the Fed. Of course, Phil was asking about that at the end of the interview, as investors are preparing for another 25 basis points. Let's give you a look at futures. We get started with trading here at the New York Stock Exchange 14 minutes from now. A lot more earnings to cover here on Squawk on the Street right after this.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Still to come, the Atlanta Braves splitting off from Liberty Media, becoming the only publicly traded franchise in baseball. And yesterday, are you watching this? There it is. Team completed the first 8-3-5. It's 8-3-5 triple play since 1884. Yeah, watch it again. One, two, there's.
Is that why the stock's trading high?
No.
Okay.
Well, we're going to talk to the CEO of the Braves later this hour. Let's give another check on some of today's big earnings movers as well. All right, I'm looking forward to your surprise earnings mover. Alphabet, obviously the standout in the positive territory. We haven't talked Snap yet, but we will. I'm surprised AT&T's unchanged.
Why? It was all about free cash flow, trying to keep the dividend.
They came through with $4.2 billion in free cash flow.
No, please, it's cut.
We're back after this.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Let's turn to the broader markets. Investors bracing for another likely rate hike. In fact, it'd be quite a surprise if we didn't get 25 basis points, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
of course, we could get 50. That would be a surprise,
That would be a surprise. But look, Jay Powell's a telegrapher. It's very interesting. He had some numbers this morning on Frank Collins' show, which says that the actual very little movement after he speaks. Well, that's exactly what you aim for if you're a Fed Reserve chair.
But you talk about the press conference. You actually have encouraged him to stop doing it.
Well, I think he should, because
that's where we get a lot more commentary that could move the market.
But having been a former reporter who only tried to make people look bad because that was my job, I was called a hatchet man, I would find a question that would make it so that he would stumble and make him look bad because that was my role in life. And I've since graduated to be much more like Coggy.
Yes, I don't think people would call you a hatchet man any longer.
No, Dalai Lama's got some very interesting comments. And also a guy named Jack Kornfield. I've been listening to him.
Yes, you've told me about Jack.
Well, because I think he talks about Buddhism, and it's something I've got, I'm trying to adopt.
Speaking of the economy, let's come back to some earnings. LVMH caught my eye, and I know you
US
follow the
bad,
company
China
closely.
Good.
Thank you. LVMH, the giant luxury retailer that has helped make Bernard Arnault very close to, if not the richest man in the world at one any minutes. One point or time, depending on where Tesla stock
and
price
depending
is.
Depending on how Twitter X is marked.
Or X is doing. Not today, though, given a 5% decline potentially in is at least his ownership stake there. What's funny, Jim, is it a reflection of the top end of the U.S. consumer? They're not buying cognac anymore, apparently. And it was the U.S. and not China where we would have expected, perhaps, that things would have been weaker.
There's a cut, yes.
That contributed to a number that was not as good as expected.
People are shying away for premiumization. Now, the other day, Robert Frank had a really fantastic piece, buried, about the decline in high-end auctions. I mean, really staggering. There is a high-end strike, which I've not been able to figure out. Why are the people who are really wealthy in this country not spending as they used to? We don't have an analysis, but it's worth looking because what's keeping up spending is the lower end, is our younger consumers. So
yeah, they also
really
do talk
point.
About in the quarter, you know, it's the entry-level buyer for a luxury item right. That may not be there right
but
now.
Why aren't we talking more about how China's coming back? Because China's been disastrous.
That was surprising.
Yeah, and don't forget Alibaba. Ever since they decided to spin off their web business,
yeah,
it's fantastic. Stock. We have to stay close to the idea that China may actually have a bottom here. Right? It's much very hard to believe.
All right, get ready. You got a mad dash coming up.
Oh my God, my mad dash is blowout.
All right, it's blowout. We're back in two. Welcome back. Let's get to a mad dash, and we got an opening bell in 2 minutes. What do you got?
You know, I speak to a lot of young people who are trying to get interested in the stock market. They tend to be fixated in stocks under 10 or single-digit stocks. And my favorite one right now, by far, is Banco Santander, where in a routine Spanish company delivered earnings per share of 13%, delivering on strategic goals, 9 million customers added in the past 12 months, double-digit growth in revenue, particularly strong revenue growth in our global business. This is rivaling J.P. Morgan, where she used to work.
You've been a fan for some time, and by the way, not a bad chart.
And the decline there, by the way, was really, I felt, because there was kind of a problem with Spain and a left-wing coalition. Well, if you look at the vote that we just had, it's a right-center coalition coming in. So you've got politics going her way. You've got cash dividend going her way. You've got strong growth. This is the $4 stock that younger people should get invested in. She's a terrific banker. Really one of the best in the world. Scratch golfer, by the way.
No kidding.
Yeah, scratch golfer.
I know. You've been enthusiastic about her leadership in the bank for quite some time. And again,
well, look at that. I mean, look
people
at that.
People give
that's
you a hard time about your calls, but
well, and
on
David,
that
I know
one,
that you.
You've had a good
I know
one.
How to. You know how to spot a reverse Head and Shoulders better than
oh,
anyone.
Oh, I do. I
and
do.
There you go, younger people. Banco Santander is the stock for you. That's the largest bank in Europe.
It is.
Yeah. Well, Spain is also probably the best growth market because it's not certainly not connected to the German.
I'll go to Madrid any day of the week. That's all I'll tell you. I
my
love
daughter
that city.
Taught English there and wow. Said it was the greatest place on earth.
What a great place. Spain was great. All right, opening bell, you heard the applause. We'll give you a look at the real-time exchange back at HQ because it is going to show more red on the board, most likely when it's all done.
You know, we never talked about two stocks.
Hold on. I got to talk about my buddy Greg Maffei because he's doing the honors there at the NASDAQ, CEO of Atlanta Braves Holdings as well, Derek Schiller. And we're going to talk to them in a few minutes. Talk to them about the split off of the Braves, and then I'm going to talk to Maffei as well separately about a lot of other things.
Stock. We recommended the stock, the Braves stock. We did a piece on it because we like it so much.
Really?
Yeah, Ben Stotto, who is a research director, part of our Mad Money Plus campaign that we're starting to have about memos that we think people would pay for. David, we're forgetting the two irrelevant stocks. Two stocks went into irrelevancy last night.
Okay.
And they did it during their conference calls. One because they seem to be in a dream world, that's Snap. And the other because they seem to have had it with the analysts, that's Texas Instruments. So you read these and you just say, you know what? I'm not going to spend as much time on these as I normally would because, frankly, the delusional Snap was quite, unorthodox.
All right, you mention it and you say they're irrelevant, but you got to give me more here.
Because they,
by the way, monetizing messaging is just not that easy,
no,
I guess.
No, and what's happened is that, look, you can't compete
that's
with
what
the
Snap
big boys.
Largely is.
This is the big boys, David. The linear TV people can't compete with Google. They just can't. Look at Hershey. Hershey's ROI with Google was so big that any consumer packaged goods company that doesn't use it.
By the way, if you shorted Snap at the arrival of TikTok when I first mentioned it to you, one of the few things I've ever told you that you didn't already know, I remember years ago, you would be in a good place.
Here's the way the Snap
having been short Snap throughout that period.
You just said everything's great. Right. You just said everything's great, Evan, but isn't it terrible? Every single call was that. Texas Instruments was basically, hey guys, are you guys just irrelevant? And then the CEO just saying, who the hell cares what you have to say? You don't know anything. So that was kind of like, wow, let's just cease and desist. That's
$160 billion market value.
No, but they don't want to.
It's not irrelevant.
No, the calls are relevant. Companies are not irrelevant.
Okay.
The calls are relevant because Texas Instruments has no patience with what they regard as being analysts who are suboptimal.
Meanwhile, the stock is down over 5%.
Well, the only end that was any good was auto, and then some personal electronics were good, which jives with what Amy Hood said about personal electronics. I do believe there's a bottom in PCs, but the Texas Instruments was deeply disappointing because they basically said, look, there's this inventory problem everywhere, so stop bothering us. It's not bothering us. They are building some plants. But I like to get on that conference call because I think that there's a way to make that tone much better.
Snap shares, as we saw, down 19% as well. Two of the larger losers, obviously Snap a lot more percentage-wise. Although its 52-week low is $7.33. Evan Spiegel is going to be speaking, I believe, to Julia Boorstin.
Tell
myself
hi.
As well later this morning. You do wonder whether maybe it's just time to, if you can get somebody to bid you something for the company,
course,
sell
but
it.
Then you got Lina Khan from the FTC saying you can't do that. Now, she allegedly is after Amazon. Now,
allegedly, there's a report in Politico that the FTC has Amazon in its sights for trying
please.
To break it up.
Please.
By the way, I think many shareholders, would say thank you, Lena, for creating all that shareholder value.
You don't want Jonathan Kanner from the Assistant Attorney General from Justice to go after Alphabet because the strongest part is search, which is what he wants to disable. You do want Lena Khan to win because right now we don't see the turn. The big thing with Amazon is, are they going to guide the low single-digit growth in Amazon Web Services, and can you turn it around?
Well, what did you take from the Azure quarter at Microsoft in terms of a tell for the AWS quarter, if anything?
I am going to say that there is beginning to be too many decisions that have to be made before you go aggressive in the cloud. So,
what does that mean?
Well, I mean, there's elongated decision making
by companies.
And I just, Snowflake flagged that to me. I think that if you go to the Oracle conference call, you realize, hey, maybe Oracle's making a difference. We know Google is making a difference, Google Cloud. But Amazon cleared a lot by just saying, you know what? We see a bottom in Q4 because generative AI is going to kick in for us. But right now, David, generative AI is something that is talked about, but we are not seeing.
It's not clear the AI tailwinds are there as yet for AWS. They may be. And by the way, Microsoft and Azure did go, from 4,500 AI customers to 11,000, something like that?
It's 100. I mean, the number of customers are signed. Now, let's see. The stock is down 12. What I want people to do, and this is what I'm recommending for club members, let all the sellers clear out. Plus, there'll be some sellers related to the Federal Reserve, and then pounce. It's what I call a long day. But Amy Hood kiboshed the fabulous CFO, and what she taketh away, the market will give it.
On Amazon, again, this idea of breaking it up, which, again,
it's not going to happen.
By the way, we can't confirm these reports from Politico or correct.
It was like a law review article.
Many people know Lina Khan's history. Of course, she did write that seminal piece about Amazon when she was at Yale Law School.
Yeah.
We had her on last week talking about, of course, the new merger guidelines. But, Jim, again, I know any number of Amazon shareholders who think that thing would be a rocket ship if they ever said, you know what, we're splitting Amazon Web Services off from retail, or maybe we're even splitting logistics, Amazon Web Services, and retail into three separate companies.
Right, and we know that they have to start. There's great leverage that they can cut costs a little bit on Amazon Prime. They've really not emphasized that. But David, yeah, because Amazon Web Services, if you had any sort of delta backup, is worth not the price of the company, but worth a great deal. So Lena Khan really on the side of the bulls, Jonathan Cantor on the side of the bears. Let's keep track that the government is very much involved with both companies.
Yeah, it still comes up a lot. All right, we got plenty of other things to get to this morning. You know, AT&T, was it Verizon? Who did you say was irrelevant recently?
Well, no, I just think that if you're just going to try to manage everything for your cash flow to be able to pay on your dividend, I mean, AT&T was all about cost cuts.
They hit the $6 billion in cost cuts earlier than they said, achieved $6 billion plus run rate cost savings target six months ahead of schedule.
It's a strategy.
They did put up
strategy,
a free cash flow number. Remember, last quarter, they put up a free cash flow number that was far off, far below what had been anticipated, making it seem unlikely they would make the year target. This quarter, $4.2 billion gets them back on track, Jim.
But where does it get to?
But the stock is not responding.
What's the strategy? Now, I think, David, yesterday the Verizon call, which actually was good because, as you said, they put through a price increase, the analysts seem more focused on lead and copper wire.
They put through a price increase on fixed wireless, too. That's what I was talking about.
Yes, that was very important.
But Stanky, the CEO of AT&T, is talking about a softer fiber being, because they're deploying a lot of overbuilding and deploying a lot of fiber.
Right.
Saying that it's going to be a bit softer in the market because expect we're going to see housing movement necessarily recover. That's a key question, of course, for broadband as well. When people move, they tend to make decisions about broadband.
Well, there are people who are calling for the heads of both companies because they believe that this has been a kind of a tragic decline versus T-Mobile. I just think that if he can pay the dividend, Stanky pay the dividend, the stock will live another day.
It may be these comments, I'm not sure, that have turned the stock a bit. Take a listen to what Stanky had to say about sort of fiber being a bit softer in the second quarter.
I expect that things are probably going to continue to be a bit softer in the market because I don't expect that we're going to see housing movement necessarily recover. I think it's a artifact of mortgage rates and people's ability to make those discretionary moves. But look, I feel really comfortable about our ability to continue to add along the clip that we're adding right now.
Right.
So there's AT&T. And as you pointed out, of course, it may be this concern about lead wrapped cables that continues to be an overhang, even though they did give us a lot more detail last week. Made some changes in terms of fighting a lawsuit in Nevada and decided to keep some fiber in the ground there to see how the cables.
Once you get your teeth into that story, the Wall Street Journal will be like the Reuters story in Tau for J&J. Dave, you know what may have been the best quarter last night, and I know don't talk about it?
Chubb.
Because they had a great, what's known as combined ratio. They avoided the big catastrophes. The stock is up very big. Evan Greenberg knows how to write insurance better than anybody in this country.
My God, my rates went up so much.
Are you a Chubb?
Well, no, not anymore.
You switched?
I had a switch. It was just ridiculous.
I trust Chubb because they pay. They pay.
I know, but you can still go to some of these. There's a couple of others that are somewhat competitive now. You know, at least they, 20% increase on your premium every year is...
Because of my housing portfolio, you mentioned my insurance is on the upper left-hand corner of
this
desk.
You must pay them, I can't even imagine, for your...
Certainly more than my mortgage.
For your 27 homes.
Certainly more than my mortgage. That's a little exaggeration. David, speaking of exaggeration...
Just a little exaggeration.
How about the way that UPS stock initially went up on that deal?
Yes.
And then people see that maybe the Teamsters got the best of them.
Although... It's a good thing for the U.S. economy that there is not going to be a UPS strike.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned that because that was very important for the U.S. I do want to know whether Ford is going to talk about whether there's more of an issue with the UAW than Carol Tomei talked about being an issue with Teamsters. Very important to watch that because when you look at the way GM traded, it started going down when Mary Barra, the CEO, glossed over the union issue. That's a big mistake. Sean Fain reminds me of the 1930s UAW, which we don't want. Dave, we also didn't mention what Charlie Scharf did at Wells Fargo.
Okay.
The CEO with the best capitalized bank has added a $30 billion buyback. Now, people just basically say, you know what we should be focused on is BankWest.
Oh, you mean that deal?
The deal. What do you think of
it's a little deal,
Well, but it was Centerbridge. I thought you would have followed that a little.
Yeah, Warburg and Centerbridge. We're talking about Bank of California and PacWest.
Yeah,
they're getting together.
PacWest, I don't know. Probably too early.
Which is helpful to both of them. And they brought in new capital, which perhaps is even more helpful
but
overall.
But these were supposed to bring down
with private equity stepping,
as we know
with
it.
Private equity stepping up to buy shares of Bank of California, 21.8 million shares of common at 12:30, 10.8 million shares of a new class of non-voting common equivalent at 12:30, and that includes Warburg on this warrants as well, Centerbridge stepping up. But yeah, you've got some consolidation. PacWest obviously responding positively. It's a stock-for-stock deal. Let me give you the terms, actually. 0.6569 of a share of Bank of California for each share.
And then one other that you always say, you always remind me, Jim, it is a $500 billion company, but don't talk about it, Visa.
Yes, Visa.
Held back by still not getting the cross-border traffic. I think that's to come. I do like MasterCard more than Visa, pointing that out, but there's a lot to like there.
All right, and let's come back to the biggest of the big. Alphabet shares are up 5.7%. Microsoft is down 3.3%.
Let them sell. You've got to let the people who don't know anything bolt from Microsoft, and then you come in. There are sizable people who don't know Amy Hood.
Because I think it's more interesting on Google, which has been kind of used as a source of funds due to worries about its AI strategy.
Well,
and that, does that change as a result of this quarter?
I was very impressed with how that YouTube, which is not involved with AI strategy, is doing very, very well. But the search had an acceleration.
By the way, I would point out Alphabet's share price is now up more this year than is Microsoft's.
Which is maybe because going into the quarter.
Neither one too shabby.
No.
One up 42%, the other up 46%.
And we get notes every day, by the way, about Apple and how Apple may be doing so well. And those of us who watch Hijack know that it drops tonight for Amazon Web Services. I do think that, David, when I look at the Magnificent Seven, so far so good.
So far so good.
Yeah, I mean, we need to see Amazon say we are bottoming at high single digit growth for Amazon Web Services. If they go negative in Amazon Web Services, then you need VenusCon to step in.
And anything, any takeaways at all for Meta from what we've seen from
Alphabet?
Meta's
up six. My temperature was every one of these, and I just wish. Look, Meta up, well, now it's only up three. Coming in so hot into a quarter, I think that the spend is down dramatically. I think Instagram's doing very well. I think Reels might be the star of the show. But what you have to hope is that he doesn't talk about, that Zuckerberg doesn't talk about economic weakness. Remember when he gave you that forecast?
Although it is still the year of efficiency.
I like that.
And people like that CFO at Meta, who has been very focused on cost. And they're hoping the same for the new CFO, whoever takes Ruth Porat's place at Alphabet.
And we don't know who that's going to be.
No, we don't.
That CFO, well, I'll tell you,
it's a big job.
Matt is really well run. And they moved first when it came to CapEx cut. They had, they're draconian.
All right, let's take a look at Meta after the bell today. Before we head to break, let's give you a quick look at the bond market. Check out how treasuries are faring so far this morning. We got a Fed meeting, if you haven't heard, by the way. 2 o'clock is when we'll get the word on rates. 4.887 is where we stand right now in the 2-year, and the 10-year is 3.883. We're back right now. All right, after the break, we're going to have the CEOs of Liberty Media. That's Greg Maffei, of course. You can see him there ringing the bell. And the Atlanta Braves CEO as well. It's the first publicly traded team in Major League Baseball. And as a longtime Mets fan, sadly, it is also a very good team. We'll talk to them. First, though, let's check out the top gainers in the S&P. Led by Union Pacific.
Yeah, we got a new CEO in there.
New CEO, Lance Fritz, stepping aside. He will be joining us on the 11. I'll be anchoring, but Morgan Brennan will be conducting that interview. Don't miss it. 11 a.m. Eastern, Lance Fritz. We're back in. The Atlanta Braves ringing the opening bell at the NASDAQ this morning, coming after the team completed its split off from Liberty Media last week. Liberty, of course, has owned it for quite some time. Joining me now first on CNBC is Derek Schiller. He's president and CEO of the Atlanta Braves. And Greg Maffei, of course, is, oh, look at that. Thanks, guys. Liberty Media's CEO. And Greg's going to stick around, and we're going to have a conversation about a lot of other things. But I do want to start, Greg, with you now and then get to Derek in a minute. You know, what's the benefit to shareholders of having the Atlanta Braves split off from Liberty, so to speak, now being, an asset-backed security? Why do it?
Well, I think it gives shareholders an opportunity to feel like they're direct owners of the Braves, with greater transparency, greater information flows, and a focus just on the performance of the team and our real estate opportunities at the Battery.
Well, Derek, then, what do you think is going to move the stock price? You know, you're a profitable team. And by the way, that's not insignificant in baseball. But that being said, you're not necessarily in a growth business. The asset value may be found only really through a sale. So how do you see the stock sort of moving here? What's it going to be based on wins and losses?
Yeah, I'd give a little perspective to that. First of all, we've been in existence for 150 years. And for the better part of 50 years, we've been inside of public companies, first with Turner Broadcasting and ultimately Liberty Media, and then became a tracking stock and now a full asset-backed equity. In all those times, we're understanding more and more about what it takes to operate a business in the public sector. And, you know, we're comfortable with it, is one way to say it. And I think the way in which our team, both on the field as well as off the field, our organization is approaching this is really try to do all the things that we do already really well and just keep doing them and keep doing them even better. You know, this is a team that is operated extremely strong. We have best-in-class areas of our business all across the various ways that we conduct our business. You know, we've built a terrific mixed-use development, over 2 million square feet, led by Mike Plant, that is just doing unbelievable. Have almost everything leased out there. We're expanding upon that. So there's a lot of room for growth, but we can also, you know, be proud of what we've accomplished already.
Listen, hey, nobody's going to take that away from
you. Can I add to...
No, because I get to ask the questions, Greg. No, I get to ask the questions. All right?
I was going to try and answer help with your question.
Holy cow. How about the Phillies?
I always need help from you, Greg. Always. I don't understand. All right, growth is fine. You guys could win the World Series. You have an incredibly good team, sad to say, as a longtime Mets fan. Kudos to Terry McGuirk for running this thing so well for all these years. But, Greg, I think many shareholders expect that this ultimately is going to lead to a potential sale of the Braves to somebody who wants to pay an enormous amount of money for the team, some rich guy. Is that true?
Well, I think we have created a path where that can happen, but that certainly we have no plan or intent. As to how we can make money, I think if you look what's gone on, the financial results of the company have continued to improve, not only with increased fan attendance, not only with better monetization of those fans, but frankly also with the real estate development. So well short of imagining just a sale, I think it can look and say increasing profits driven by the operations on field, the operations of the real estate. I think it's telling that Bleacher Report reports that we have both the best team management in terms of business operations and the best management in terms of baseball operations. I think it's a real kudos to this management team.
It is. You see it on the field. Derek, I do want to come back to you on the economics of the business overall. You know, I can understand how player salaries continue to rise significantly, for example, in the NBA and the NFL, given their TV contracts have gone up by multiples. Not so much for baseball. Explain how you manage player salaries and expectations, given the revenues are not necessarily going to be increasing in terms of those contracts that you signed for the broadcast of your games.
Well, obviously, you know, you sign a deal with your players, a collective bargaining agreement, and you operate under that. We're in the middle of operating under one of those CBAs. A number of teams have spent more during that period of time. Some teams have spent a lot less. And in our situation, we've tried to gradually improve our team with what we think to be very smart contracts. Where we can, we take younger players and we try to lock them up over a period of years. That's one way that we believe we can be effective and efficient inside of that type of economic system. You know, at the same time, I think, you know, the league at points in time will continue to look at whether this is the best system for players and for teams. You know, I think one of the things that that fans and investors are going to get a snapshot of here is you're going to get a team that's operated extremely well.
Yeah.
And so it may not be a reflection of, you know, what all 30 teams are doing. It's just what's happening with just this one team. And as Greg said, you know, we've got a terrific management team in place led by Terry McGuirk. We're doing exceptional work here. So we're focused on that. We're focused on trying to drive revenues and make them the best that they can be.
Well, certainly on the field, they are right there as one of the best, if not the best. Guys, appreciate it. Derek, thank you. Greg, I know you're sticking around. We're going to talk Sirius. We'll talk Formula One and Charter. But that's our conversation on the Atlanta Braves. Jim, let me turn
People
to you quickly.
I understand that Greg Maffei has been at the center of almost all the great communications, along with Malone.
You talked about CFOs. Remember, he was the CFO of Microsoft.
No, I remember.
A long time ago.
I happen to respect him for many, 30 years. Okay, so
what do you got on
tonight?
I've
got Kroger. I think, remember, they're in the crosshairs of the FTC on trying to do this deal with Albertsons, but they've been very well run. There is a challenge from the clubs, both Walmart and Costco, that's really been putting some tremendous price disagreement between them. And then, David, probably the best opportunity is Brian Nichols, Chipotle. The stock is up 50%, but he's crushing. And I just find him to be so knowledgeable. Jack Hartung, CFO, so incredible. I can never wait for the call. It's fantastic.
Right. Good job today.
It's a fat, okay, it's a fat Prioni tie.
Good job, though.
And David, it is worth the price of your apartment. Get your darn hands off it.
We're back right after this.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
All opinions expressed by the Squawk on the Street participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information Squawk on the Street participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Squawk on the Street disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Squawk on the Street disclaimer.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.